Dan Katz is Vice President of Technology Solutions at InTheDev, and we're approaching the one-year anniversary of Project Open Data. Dan, what do you think the state of the art is right now in open data in the federal government? How have they done, or how have the agencies done 1 year on in letting their information go and letting people play with it?
I think agencies have actually done a very good job so far. What's interesting to me is agencies were really starting to do this, you know, well before that executive order was passed. If you look back maybe even 10 years or so, there was this great liberation of GPS data and NOAA climate data, and that enabled such incredible amounts of innovation in technology solutions, web apps, mobile apps, different types of analytics and mashups that were happening. And I really believe with the amount of data that's coming out now, and especially the process around it and some of the governance around that data, we're going to kind of have this second wave, this renaissance of really innovative, really high value solutions that people are going to start coming up with.
What is your sense of the agency's comfort level at distributing that information? I mean, there was a sense, at least gathering, that when the open data executive order first came out, agencies kind of, well, we'll do it, I guess, now that we have to. Has that changed at all, or is that apprehension kind of still hanging around?
I'm going to say that's a very human apprehension, and I think with people that are concerned about that, that concern is still going to be there. And you can see there's a real variance across different agencies, and maybe even more so at the county and municipal level for what kind of data they're letting out. You know, it's a matter of, do I check the box and publish some data sets and then don't touch them for a year and don't really include all the information that would make it really usable? Or do I treat this like an asset that I want to really manage and keep it updated and make sure that I get feedback from people who are consuming it and using it, and even leveraging the users out there of these applications to improve that data and enhance it? And that's where I think, you know, real change and real excitement is going to come from. It's not just about saying, oh, we're publishing our data sets. It's treating this thing as a living, breathing, you know, almost like a, this is a funny way to say it, but I always think of the idea of like Carl Jung and the collective unconscious. Well, this is sort of like the technology version of that. This is our collective experience that is the bits and bytes that are going in and out of our daily transactions and interactions. And making this available really brings up everyone and makes everyone able to make better decisions.
The piece of this that I am seeing movement, at least with understanding and comfort level inside agencies, is there was a perception, I think, when Vivek Kundra came in and first started to talk about data a lot, and mm-hmm. Anish Chopra did, that this was data that the agencies were going to release, and people that agencies didn't know who they were going to take this and do stuff with it. And the part of it that I have heard a lot about is, hey, we didn't realize that we internally can do a lot of things with a lot of different pieces of data by putting them together, because I didn't know what some guy at another bureau had, or even another entire agency altogether had, that when I overlay it with my stuff, I can fulfill my mission much easier or better or more efficiently or cheaper or whatever the advantage is that you're looking for. Are you seeing a lot of that too?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, when we talk about open data, the first thing people think about is the kind of end user and the consumer and the citizen, or the developer that's, you know, sitting in a basement somewhere cracking away. But making data open really enables that machine-to-machine communication as well. And, you know, I'm wondering if you look at, for example, there's an app, it used to be called Asmopolis, I believe, but now it's called Propeller. It's a sensor that you can put on an asthma inhaler, and it's basically pulling in data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association for weather and location, and it's sending some of this data back to CMS and HHS, and they're able to basically use that data that's coming in from consumers as well as data that they're getting from NOAA on climate and be able to have these mashups that are showing what regions people are having more respiratory problems in. And then they'll be able to push that data back to consumers and to other organizations to be able to provide better information and better health care for them, giving people suggestions on areas to avoid or suggestions on, you know, different triggers that might be in different environments. My daughter has asthma, so that one's really interesting to me.
Tell me about the comfort level of agencies being able to push information out, have it go out into the private sector, out into the general population, and then bring that data back and be able to do something with it. I'm thinking particularly of the hygiene aspects of that kind of out and in.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's a technology question, and it's also kind of a governance question. So, you know, can you have secure channels of communication where you're going to make sure that anything that's coming into those systems is scrubbed for anything that may, you know, cause problems or inject, you know, bad malicious data or code in there. But you also need to have the resources of people actually looking at this data and making sure that, you know, it's reviewed and, you know, valid before integrating it in with government data. It also brings up, you know, some privacy concerns too. I mean, the review that just came out, the 1-year review of the Open Data Directive, you know, shows that yes, we're publishing a lot of data out there, but there are a lot of questions and a lot of ambiguities around how do we protect that data? How do we ensure that the people that are consuming it or the other agencies and systems that are consuming it are not using that for profit or purposes that would be against the original intention. And just for an example, this is something that we're working with right now, kind of a prototype project where imagine you were you know, out there for UPS or somebody like that delivering packages out in a neighborhood, and you had a device that was consuming data that's census data, location data, and so you would know before you walked into a house or walked into a neighborhood, you know, is this the right location? Is this the right person there? But the freely available data from census might also show you the socioeconomic level of that person, that race of that family, and what kind of bias would that introduce to someone who's delivering a package, for example.
Dan Katz of Inadev is my guest on Industry Chatter today. The data avalanche is something that we talk about a lot. Everybody who is involved in the federal space right now is talking about how agencies are using data for decision-making processes and for measuring performance and all of these kinds of things. That's today. Do we have a sense yet of how controlling that data might be able to help us in ways that maybe we're not able to quite do yet, but are on the horizon?
Yeah, I think that it definitely does. If you look back just, you know, a couple of years ago, we couldn't have even predicted some of the ways that we're connecting ourselves and connecting devices to these data sources, and things that are being collected maybe without us even being aware of it, you know, can be used in a lot of different ways. And so I think as storage has gotten cheaper, as software and technologies have become available for managing and sorting through some of that data, even if we're not exactly sure how it's going to be used today, it's certainly within the realm of possibility that it'll be used in the future in ways that we can't even imagine.
I want to transition for a moment to the mobile space, because the mobile space and the data revolution are connected, but I'm not sure that we are thinking about and talking about all of the potential ways that they're connected. A lot of people talk about just accessing information on mobile devices, and I can't believe that that is the limit of the potential for the connection between mobile and data, is it, Dan?
Not in the least. The whole world of the internet and connectivity, I think, is being revolutionized through mobile devices. And being able to see something on a mobile device is like the tiniest little portion of what's actually capable of happening. You carry something with you in a mobile device. It's a very personal experience. And that device has a lot of information about you. It has your appointments. It has your contacts. It might have your music preferences and articles and books that you've saved. It also has device capabilities. It has a GPS sensor. It has an accelerometer. It has a camera. And so those are the things that really differentiate it from just a passive reading sort of experience like you would have on a desktop device. So one other example of something that we're doing right now, we're working closely with National Park Service and ABMC, American Battle Monuments Commission, down at the National Mall. And at the World War II Memorial and Korean Veterans War Memorial, we just finished the first phase of an interpretive project with kiosks. The second phase of that is going to enable people with mobile devices to have kind of a virtual reality, augmented reality experience using the capabilities of that device. So imagine, you know, for example, that you're walking around the Korean Veterans War Memorial and you're moved by the inscriptions and the statues and you want to learn more. Well, you might be able to just hold your device up to one of the statues and using image recognition technology and the capabilities of that device, you're going to be able to view additional media, additional information, and that could even be tailored with some of that personal data that you have on that device. Maybe you're a school of the school children age, or you're with a veterans group or something like that. Content could be even personalized that way. So I think it goes way beyond just consuming content, and it's more like something that you carry with you and is a little Star Trek-like in an extension of your day-to-day activities. I'm a Fitbit addict, so I'm always tracking my steps and what I eat, and all that goes right into my mobile device, and that data goes right up to their servers, which have an API, and other apps can connect to that. It really is sort of futuristic and Star Trek-like, I think, how much of an extension these devices are to our daily lives.
You really walk the walk, or I guess in the case of Fitbit, you could run the run, I suppose.
It's mostly walk the walk.
There again is another privacy issue. If the government gets in the business of potentially collecting that information, or at least expressing an interest in using that information through very legitimate purposes, I could think of a million types of applications at NIH or CDC or other such agencies where they would love to have that information, but there's a barrier there, in at least in the minds of some people, that I don't want the government having access to that information, even if it's anonymized. Is there a way around that, or is that just something that the public sector organizations of all types have to live with?
I think you're right on the second point there. I think it's just something we have to live with, and you can look at the example of e-healthcare records, for example. That's something where people sign a waiver and their records become accessible to the government or to private insurance companies. There's going to be people who are interested in contributing that information, just like there are people who are interested in sharing, their health records. And there's people who are going to be concerned about it. But I think it's sort of a cultural change. I don't know that it's necessarily going to happen in the short term, but I think there's a lot of benefit through using devices like that, through using something like the Propeller asthma inhaler device I was talking about, where it's going to improve the quality of services that government can deliver for everyone. It doesn't have to be a Big Brother type scenario. It could be something where it's more of a partnership.
Dan Katz of Inadev is my guest. The kind of technology that we're talking about and the kind of capability and capacity we're talking about, does Moore's Law apply here? If I'm a federal agency looking at exploring some of these things, can I expect to see either a lot more capability as time goes on or see the price come down on the capability that's available today?
I think both. I think there's no reason to wait when it comes to really enabling your agency with data tools. Data itself, it's text, right? It's basically strings of text, and there's going to be different tools and technologies that enable you to process it and slice it and dice it in different ways. But with what's available right now, there's an enormous amount you can do. We work with a lot of open source solutions like Drupal, and there's something called DCAN, and which is a data management portal. There's CCAN, which is in use by a lot of agencies. These are free tools where you can basically create an open data portal. And if you look at there's the data.gov, there's DC government has a great portal, Montgomery County. There's really a lot of examples of low-hanging fruit here where you can take existing data sets and publish them and make them available. For consuming data that's coming in from different sources, you know, that's been around for a long time too. One other example that we're working with right now is through Department of Justice, the National Criminal Justice Reference Service. These guys publish an enormous amount of information and crime statistics and abstracts for crime-related data. They've been publishing stuff like that through an API for quite a long time using something kind of pedestrian like SharePoint, the API service. So, yeah, the technology is going to continue to improve, but I don't think it's a reason to wait to start or improve any of these initiatives.
What should data leaders, mobility leaders, and the people who are kind of straddling both of those right now in the federal government be thinking about long term? I mean, a lot of these leaders say, I am so consumed by what I'm dealing with today and 2 weeks from now and within the next year to really be able to think about the horizon.
Yeah, I think the biggest piece of advice I could give is engage users, engage citizens, build partnerships. The most successful data projects out there usually have a very large citizen component. So there's Code for America, which is a fabulous program. People call it Peace Corps for Geeks. I'm actually in the process of starting a Code for America brigade in Prince George's County in Southern Maryland, but there's one in D.C. and Fairfax County. These are organizations that work with municipalities or states and basically take data, create applications, help improve those data projects for these organizations. There's things like the Health Palooza that just happened. There's industry government data roundtables that are happening. I would say just don't try to do it alone. Don't treat it like a technology problem. Really help build a culture around this with actual users.